All right, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 19. We are here on our exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. We thank you for joining us for yet another round of Dead Man Talking. My name is Alex Dorio. I'm one half of your hosts, one of the creatures of the night here, guiding you along this journey. And I am with my tag team partner, Travis White, and Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you as well. This is our Christmas special episode.
This is
how great is it that In Your House 5 is called Season's Beatings?
I mean, we started this podcast back in August, about 5 months ago now, just kind of on a whim. We talked about it for a few weeks and just decided to dive into it with no planning whatsoever. And somehow the fates have aligned with a Christmas-themed pay-per-view for the episode that drops right at Christmas. It's a Christmas miracle.
It is a Christmas miracle.
From the man who walks with the angels.
It all works together, yeah. So good. Yeah, we couldn't have planned that better. I remember telling you about a month ago, hey, dude, I looked at the calendar, Season's Beatings is dropping right before Christmas.
It's fantastic.
Anyway, yeah. Merry Christmas to those of you. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Festivus. Happy holidays.
Absolutely. Happy holidays to everybody. We're glad you're joining with us, and you've made us a part of the past few months, and you're making us a part of the Christmas season. I know there's a lot of podcasts to listen to, and probably a lot of them putting out Christmas episodes. I'm sure the Pritchard shows are all, you know, and Conrad Thompson's shows, they've all got all sorts of episodes. So we thank you for making time for us, making time for Talking Taker, all of our fans and followers and subscribers out there. We're thankful for you guys this Christmas season. We do appreciate it, and we're looking forward to spending all of 2018 with you guys as well. Rolling through all of the episodes we'll have every Friday for you in 2018.
Absolutely.
We can't
Absolutely.
Wait. Well, you know, just speaking of Christmas, you know, this is a pretty short match, so might not have a ton of stuff
minutes.
To talk about. Yeah, 6-minute match. But I thought it'd be fun, Travis. You know, we've known each other since the sixth grade for almost 20 years now. We've known each other as friends. A lot of Christmases together. You've gotten me a lot of great Christmas presents over the years. And, you know, I've been asking for wrestling-themed Christmas presents for about as long as I've ever watched wrestling. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have gotten a lot of wrestling-related Christmas presents throughout the years. So I asked on Twitter and on Facebook earlier this week, like, what of our listeners' favorite wrestling related Christmas presents, and some people sent in some good stuff. So I thought I'd ask you, my friend, and I'll share mine here after you share yours. What is, like, your favorite memory of a wrestling related Christmas present you've ever gotten?
All right, so you and I pretty much always get each other something wrestling related.
That's true.
Aside, my favorite wrestling-related gift from not you would probably be, not probably, definitely be my 6-foot-tall wrestling dummy that my aunt stitched me. Good heavens, she basically took a pair of black jeans, a black long-sleeve shirt, and stitched them together and put socks on them, and she filled the guy with just a bunch of stuffing. And, you know, he had sleeves, he had gloves on his hands, he had a head, he just sewed on, and put an NWO shirt on him, too. So this was in 98, probably. No, it had been in Christmas 97 or 98, yeah. So, but it was like 6-foot-tall wrestling dummy that, I mean, I know I wore the life out of, you and I together in handicap matches, tag team matches.
Triple threat matches.
Triple threats. We wore the life out of this dude. I wish he was still around my parents' attic, but I know we've gotten rid of him. But who would have thought? It probably took her, you know, $6 to make it, and, like, I got years of fun out of that. We both did. So, yeah, that's probably my favorite wrestling-related, you know, thing that I got for Christmas. Because that was, man, I missed that thing.
That thing was amazing.
I missed that. So.
When you first told me that you got it, I thought, was a little weird, but then I was also really jealous too, because it's basically a giant wrestling buddy, and you know, everybody remembers wrestling buddies, and that's on my list of favorite wrestling gifts. I got a Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy when I was, I guess I was 6 or 7. I don't know, those original wrestling buddies,
yeah.
And man, I loved that thing. I got the same amount of enjoyment out of that. It's so weird when you say it out loud, but yeah, just totally fine when you're a kid, totally normal. But just to say something different, because that was one of my two things, you know. Obviously, we usually get each other wrestling DVDs or T-shirts or something like that. You got me a box of Bootios for my birthday this year. Still haven't eaten yet.
We haven't eaten those.
No. Maybe WrestleMania that's coming up. Maybe I'll open it up. But
I might have pancakes by then.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of great wrestling figures I've gotten. But my favorite, one of my favorites, I think, was probably around the same time, 98-ish, maybe 98-99. I don't remember what year it came out, but the WWF Titantron Live.
The Titantron?
Yes.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
The Titantron entryway for the Jax wrestling figures, where the figures had a little sensor on the bottom of their feet where you put them on the Titantron entryway and their music would play or part of it and the video would show up. That's the coolest thing to me back then. I was so excited to open it up and to get it and to have the figures to play with that, because I was a huge action figure person. I still have somewhere notebooks of the match results and of my wrestling figure federation. And you know, I'm so jealous of the kids now that have just all the stuff I ever wanted as a kid back then, where you can change the ring skirts and you can change the ring ropes and you can do all this awesome stuff with the arena. And the figures are so much better now. But that was the first really, really awesome, amazing thing. I always wanted to have an entryway and make my action figure arena look as realistic as possible. So to get that just blew my mind, and I used the heck out of it.
I remember calling you that Christmas afternoon, because we used to call each other after, you know, we did our gifts and stuff, and I remember you telling me you got that, and I was just, like, so excited, probably jealous as well, but I remember coming over to your house and playing with that. Golly.
Yeah.
That was so cool, because, again, this is 98, I think.
Oh, yeah.
99.
It was mind-blowing.
That was really cutting edge, too. Yeah. I mean, the fact you could put Stone Cold's feet on the Titantron, and all of a sudden you hear the glass break, and he walks out. That was just, because I remember before that, I used to put WWF Volume 3 in my CD player.
Exactly.
And play it and cue their music up and play it as I'm in my golly, we sound like Cliff Marks. I completely quit talking.
We do. You know, just to add to that, did you see during the match, as Mabel is coming out, we get a promo from Todd Pettengill, Doc Hendricks, advertising WrestleMania the arcade game coming out for Christmas that year, which I'm pretty sure I got it for Christmas that year, because I definitely had it for Super Nintendo. But did you hear how much these video games cost?
This is what I want to talk about. Okay, he says,
"Listen, allow me to help you with a little bit of Christmas shopping. Right now, let me show you the WrestleMania arcade game. Here is the Super NES version, only $64.99. The Genesis Sega version, $54.99. And the Sony PlayStation, $54.99. But now, you know, this is so hard to get in stores. I went to 10 of them. They're all out. Okay, let me show you what we're going to do. We're going to throw in absolutely free a $15 value, the video that tells you the strategies and the secret codes, how you can beat the game. Something that the stores won't do for you. And you know how you can get this? Call 1-800-TITAN-91. I guess the next thing to do is let's get ready for a casket match.
Says there's $64.99 for Super Nintendo and $54.99 for Sega Genesis and PlayStation. However, the graphics that flash up on the screen say $69.99 for Super Nintendo, $64.99 for Sega, and $54.99 for PlayStation. Which, why is a PlayStation the cheapest?
Right.
It's on a CD. But anyway, regardless, this is 1995, and the games are at least $60.
Yes.
Let's fast forward now. It's 2017. I just bought my brother a video game for Christmas. He's not listening to this. Doesn't matter. It costs $60. PS4. So we can talk about inflation all we want. One thing that hasn't gone up is video games. Video games have not gone up at all, but they were expensive as heck in 1995.
Oh, yeah.
$64.99
for a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
I could not believe that when he said that. I was like, what in the world? But it did come, if you ordered it from them, you got the free VHS tape strategy guide that you couldn't get in the stores.
So, okay, so if I'm having trouble with my Doink Match, I've got to put the VHS in and then fast forward to Doink's, like, help me. But what if, like, I want to be Big Boss Man? I got to rewind the VHS. Like, how useless is that? It can't be cool.
Different times.
But if you listeners have that or have had that, please tweet us a picture, man. It is the WrestleMania, it was the arcade game on the console.
Yeah.
But it was the VHS strategy guide.
Oh, I've watched it. I rented it from Video to Go. 100%. I've seen the whole thing.
Awesome. So, but yeah, I wanted to talk about that. Those games were super expensive. But I remember that because I was talking to somebody a few months ago about how games are expensive, but they're less expensive now compared to what they were when we were kids because they were still $60 back then.
Yeah.
So, because I remember saving up my allowance money and buying WCW NWO World Tour in 1997. It's my first wrestling game I bought. I remember saving up $60 and going to Walmart and getting that. And, like, that drained me, man.
$60. Yeah, of course it did.
$97 was a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad you said that because I want to talk about that later on. But let's go ahead and talk about it. So that's awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, we are talking about In Your House 5, 1995, Seasons Beatings. I love the little taglines for these In Your House pay-per-views. And it's our first In Your House that we're getting to.
Is. In Your House 5, so it's the first one that Undertaker's been on officially. So this one, okay, this is from Hershey, Pennsylvania. So
yeah.
This is our third pay-per-view out of the last four that's from Pennsylvania. How crazy is that?
Yeah, you brought that up back at SummerSlam, which is the other one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they are hitting up the same state. You know, I guess they're different markets, but I was thinking, you know, they'll do that in New York sometimes. They'll be in Brooklyn, and then they'll go to Nassau or something like that. They might hit that, but it's super weird to be all. And I guess the WWF was more focused towards the Northeast, definitely at that time. So, I don't know. Just a weird little thing.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to point that out because I pointed it out last time, so. Lots of Pennsylvania, lots of Quaker State here.
Yeah,
so.
And it just goes to show, again, the change of the business. We've talked about Nitro coming into the picture and giving WWF some competition. And this is the fifth In Your House. So we are, like, officially in the monthly pay-per-view era. So, these first part of this podcast that we've been doing has been, you know, we've flown through 5 years really quickly because there's only three or four pay-per-views every year, and Undertaker's not even on all of them. But now, you know, we're gonna be in 1996 for a long time because he's on almost all of those pay-per-views, and this just the saturation of the business is getting more and more, and when we're focused more on pay-per-view rather than house shows or TV or anything like that, the pay-per-view is gonna be the big moneymaker. So, just again, we're not just talking about the evolution of a character. This is the evolution of the wrestling business that we're getting to chart here.
And his place in that too. But yeah, absolutely. Cause it's great to see all this stuff grow and how it's changed since we first started, you know, 19 episodes ago. So, but getting into the match,
let's talk about the buildup. Yeah.
A little buildup of that. Cause again, Kama and Taker faced off or no, wait a minute.
Mabel and Taker
faced off at King of the Ring, and Kama interfered, and that led to that stuff. So, you know, and we talked about in our last episode that Mabel, you know, he kind of chickened away from the end of the Survivor Series match and never got his comeuppance from the Undertaker from breaking his face and putting him in a adhesion, or what call it? What it's called?
Yeah, the adhesion on his face.
Adhesion. So let's rewind a little bit to the Raw on November 27th, and it's supposed to be Undertaker versus Kama again, but I just wrote nope, because Kama comes out on crutches in his acid-washed elastic waistband.
His acid-washed sweatpants he's got jeans. On. Yeah, denim sweatpants.
Denim sweatpants.
Oh, man, he was looking so great.
But yeah, it's so great. I love it. But Vince isn't buying it. He's like, you know, he's not really hurt. But DiBiase says that he bought a replacement, and he bought Sir Mo, which that doesn't age well. He bought
no,
a guy. I'll just let that one slide.
It doesn't. So. Yeah. Why does Ted DiBiase always buy black guys?
Yeah. Well, at least he didn't come out with like guys with nooses around their neck.
That's
like WCW.
True.
With a white plantation owner.
Ugh,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, but this definitely doesn't, you know, age well. But everybody's got a price for Million Dollar Man. So, sure enough, Kama's faking the injury.
And
gets involved.
Mo is looking thick, too. Oh, man.
Yeah, he looks like he swallowed himself. He is big, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kama gets involved. He's faking the injury like we thought. And but Undertaker beats Mo with the choke slam. And I wrote that. Did you watch this match?
I just like fast forwarded through it.
Did
yeah.
you see his sell when he got chokeslammed? He sells like Devon Dudley does. Like when Devon
he did the
jittery leg and shaking on the ground. Yeah, like, you know, kind of convulsing. Like, must be where Devon got it from. I don't know, but
maybe
it's just a heavy set black guy thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, he sells like Devon, and Mabel tries to take the urn chain away.
The remnants of the urn.
That's a good name for an album.
Ooh, it could be.
I might record an album called "The Remnants of the Urn." Anyway, I digress. It's hanging on the ring post, right?
Yeah, Kama had brought it out there and has draped it over the ring post.
Remnants of the Urn. Again, good, great name for an album or song title. If you're like Alter Bridge or something, I don't know. Anyway, so it's hanging on the ring post. Because Kama or Mabel had put it there, I think, and Mabel tries to take it, but Undertaker gets it back, and Vince puts over how awesome it is that Undertaker has his power back. Vince is like a giddy schoolgirl. He's so excited that Undertaker's got his power back.
Hey, wait, oh no, you dumb! That took a possession of the Undertaker now! You can feel the power of the Undertaker now! Once again, possessing the remnants of the earth!
Bearer too. Yeah. Paul Bearer like kisses it and smells it and just loves it.
I wish we can put video clips in this, because just watching him go nuts when he gets his little baby back. He's so excited.
Yeah.
He's selling it so hard. But then of course Mabel attacks him from behind and robs the urn chain away from him. So yet again we have the storyline of the stolen urn, which is just at this point, it's kind of lazy, but
it
works, you know?
It does work. It's evergreen, and but like, how many times have we seen this over the past few feuds? Yeah, I'm just, again, the urn has been stolen. Here we go again. Undertaker trying to get it back. And this whole angle is just, it's a little weird, because, Yokozuna comes out here, too, and distracts the Undertaker. And so you've got, you know, Ted DiBiase and Kama, who are one faction. And then you've got Yokozuna, who's with Jim Cornette. So this is a separate faction and guy who has feuded with The Undertaker. Then you've got Mabel and Mo, who are their own little thing. And all these guys are working together, sort of, I guess, to feud with Undertaker and take him down. But they're not really connected. And it's all kind of jumbled together. I didn't really like it. I didn't think it made a lot of sense going back and watching it, you know, 22 years later. But, we're moving forward, I guess, to try to get to Mabel and Undertaker and add a little more spice to this feud to keep it going, which I do appreciate that this feud's been going on since June, and you just don't see those slow burns of a feud anymore. So, you know, kudos to them for trying to make it last without having all these different matches against Undertaker and Mabel. They haven't fought all that many times. So I guess kudos for that. All right. So we're going to try to put this back together. We got disconnected over on Skype. In case you guys don't know, we're in two different states recording this. We Skype each other. We usually try to bang out two of these episodes back to back because of our schedules. So we try to get a couple episodes ahead, but we're on Skype, and Travis and I are actually going to see each other in real life here soon. We haven't seen each other in a couple months, but we'll see each other here and for a Need to Breathe concert. Maybe the Remnants of the Urn. They
play that.
That can be, what they headline on. But Yeah, we cut out here on Skype, so we're going to try to edit this back together. But anyway, we're talking about the build-up for the match. And 1 week has Undertaker and Undertaker getting back the remnants of the urn, and then Mabel stealing them back again very quickly. And the next week, we have, interestingly enough, someone who we haven't visited on this show in a long time, and that's Brother Love.
Thank you, brothers and sisters.
The Brother Love show makes a really strange comeback and appearance very briefly in late 95, early 96 WWF. And Brother Love mentions, before he brings out his guest, King Mabel, that he is the man that brought The Undertaker into the WWF.
So, I appreciate that continuity. Right. I appreciate that he said that.
Because we're about to get a huge lapse in continuity in Mabel's promo as he comes out. This really bugged me. He comes out and he says,
"Not only was I the first man to ever pin The Undertaker's shoulders to the mat for the 1-2-3, but I was also the first man to put him out of action. And I will also be the first man to single-handedly stuff him in his own casket."
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
And this is in the video package before the match as well, that he was the first person to ever pin The Undertaker's shoulders to the mat, which, nope, that was Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, exactly.
He says he was the first person to ever put The Undertaker out of action, which also, no, that was Yokozuna. back at Royal Rumble 94. And then he says he's going to be the first person to put him inside of a casket and close the lid, which again, also, no, that was Yokozuna. And you remember who slammed the lid on the casket?
Oh, did Bam Bam slam the lid?
Bam Bam, yeah, he got on top of it and closed the lid on there. So Mabel claims he's done these other firsts and that he's going to do this first at their casket match at In Your House 95, and all of it is just not true. And
bull crap.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's fine for a heel to lie and to say that, but Vince McMahon doesn't even call him out on it and say, hey, that's not true, which... I guess they don't want to bring up Hulk Hogan at this point in time. They're trying to erase him from history, but still, it was just egregious. I hated it.
Yeah. It was, yeah, I wrote all those things down, but I kind of forgot about them. Yokozuna being the one that, or Bam Bam being the one that closed the lid, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mabel was all wrong. His promo was like a kid in acting class trying to give a speech. It was really bad. I do not feel bad saying that, because you and I both did theater.
Sure.
In high school and stuff, and beyond that a little bit. So it's just, you know, I don't feel bad criticizing his acting. He was terrible.
It is terrible, and this segment's terrible, but it is funny to go back. It's kind of worth going back to watch, because it is just...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
WWF at its cheesiest in 1995. Brother Love says he has a gift for King Mabel, and we see a druid rolling a casket out, and Mabel is freaking out. He hates it. He's so scared. The druid reveals...
He hates it because of the outfit.
Yeah, right.
Just saying.
The black hooded figure. True. Yeah. Good point. Well, it turns out it's Sir Mo as the druid, and the casket has been desecrated with spray paint. Just awful. Yeah. Terrible.
Graffiti. Oh, I do want to say this. I wrote that the druid is unmasked as Sir Mo, and I just wrote no one cares.
Nope.
The crowd did not care. I don't remember where those were filmed. Maybe Richmond or something. Nobody cared.
Well, they're in the dark. I don't think they knew.
It might be in New York, yeah.
Sir Mo is not like the most recognizable character or figure. I'm not sure that they knew it was him.
Nobody cared. But anyway, yeah. But it's the giant urn that has the, you know, Undertaker decals and stickers all over it, and the rest in peace. The one we've seen, you know, in the last several years.
The giant casket.
Casket. Yeah. Excuse me. What did I say? Urn.
Said urn. Yeah.
Excuse me. Freudian slip. Not sure what that means, but anyway, it's got graffiti all over it. It's got, you know, spray paint and everything. This is precursor to the NWO, you know, spray painting the belts. So.
Yep. It was a good heel move. And we just said, you know, stealing the urn is cliche. We've seen that so many times now. So this was actually a nice little twist, I think, that...
Yeah, nobody's vandalized the urn. Yeah. I mean, the casket.
It's late, man. It's late. It's okay. They vandalized the casket, stolen the casket away from the Undertaker's woodshop. Man, he needs to get better security out there.
He does.
For real.
He does. does.
So yeah, a little bit different. And that brings us to the pay-per-view, Season's Beatings, In Your House, 95. We get a video package before the match, kind of recapping all of that. And we see Paul Bearer and Mabel both kind of cut promos that video package too. So that was nice little bit in there. Go ahead.
The Undertaker says, "The image of my face will be burned in your soul for eternity."
Yeah, another dark line.
A little glance toward the camera so they can zoom in on his, you know, because he's still wearing that hideous mask at this point. So,
still wearing the mask, and this is going to be, you know, we've mentioned the last casket match, which we just got back at SummerSlam. The casket just appeared at ringside. Well, this is the first time anyone besides Paul Bearer has rolled the casket that we've seen. Because we've seen Paul Bearer bring out the casket for every other casket or coffin match besides that one. And now Sir Mo is rolling it out with the remnants of the urn on top of it. So kind of a cool little turnabout there.
Twist
on there.
And this is the point where they cut Doc Hendricks in the back selling the
video game.
Can you imagine if on a pay-per-view now, there's a big match with somebody like this, and they just cut to the back with, you know, Gallows and Anderson shilling the WWEshop.com. The internet, the Twitterverse would explode. They would get so mad.
They would.
But here, it was great. I didn't care.
It was fine. Yeah. Who cares? It's Mabel. Yeah. Big deal. Paul Bearer comes out. He's screaming that, "Ooh, it's all over. It's all over."
We both did that same time.
Yeah. I think the King, but we got Vince and the King on commentary back again, and King calls Undertaker the death of the party. That's his one-liner for the Undertaker tonight.
There he is, the death of the party. So.
And he wonders if Paul Bearer's going to get stuffed into the casket as well as the Undertaker, if we're going to get a twofer, which was a little foreshadowing. Yeah.
Did you hear what he said? He asked what the Undertaker would like to get for Christmas.
What did he say?
A new face. I laughed at that. It's like a dad joke.
Oh,
it's
of just course. So stupid. It's a King joke. It's so joke. Good,
though. Because he's right, so.
Yep. So yeah, we'll just dive into it. There's not much to talk about here. It's, like you said, it's about 6 minutes long. Mabel runs away as soon as the lights come up, but ends up being the first one to attack the Undertaker here. And
And in his little pre-match promo, he talks about on Brother Love's show, he talks about how he wasn't scared.
Right.
I'm not scared of you, even though I bailed during Survivor Series. I'm not scared of you. And then at the beginning of this match, Undertaker kind of hops over the top to get Sir Mo, but Sir Mo is dangling the urn in front of his face, like taunting him. He leaves, and Mabel backs off before. Then he attacks him from behind, like every other Undertaker match.
Exactly.
Cheap shot from behind.
Because
so.
He's a heel. That makes sense.
Yep. So.
Taker hits his uppercuts that he usually does, and hits his stinger splash in the corner. We've got to get a different name for that. We've got to get a better name for the Undertaker's version of the stinger splash, but I can't come up with it yet. So if anybody on Twitter or Facebook or anything can come up with a good name for the Undertaker's stinger splash, we want to hear it.
I don't remember. I mean, like I said, when we pointed it out the first time, I didn't remember him doing it this much.
Right.
It's awesome.
Oh,
because again, that's one of my favorite. Sting's my favorite, and so seeing Undertaker do it is awesome. So
right,
I love it.
I did too.
Yeah, we'll think of something cool for it to call it, or not cool. We'll just say it anyway. So
we get all the generic stuff. Mabel takes over. He hits, he hits a big like boss man slam, and Undertaker sits up. He hits a big clothesline, and the Undertaker sits up. He hits a big body slam, and the Undertaker sits up.
But second rope splash after that, and he misses. Yeah, he sits up as he comes down for the second rope splash, and Undertaker sits up, and he misses that. And the crowd pops every time he sits up.
Oh, yeah. He just can't put him away. Finally, Sir Mo interferes, and Mabel takes over for a few minutes with his belly-to-belly and the facebreaker leg drop.
Yep. Rest in peace. Rest in peace. A chant from the crowd. I didn't see if Paul Bearer was orchestrating those or not.
I'm sure he was. Yeah. And I just don't remember the fans doing that as much, but we've seen it in a few matches. It's really cool. I like it.
They should do it if he ever comes back for another match. Get the crowd to do that.
We'll start it. Yeah, we'll start it up.
Hell yeah.
And then something absolutely ridiculous happens, and that's that Undertaker is out, and Little Sir Mo picks up the Undertaker, puts the Undertaker over his shoulder, and carries him around the ring and drops him into the casket. I was appalled at this. Little 5'6" Sir Mo just hoists up the Undertaker and puts him on the shoulder. Like, what?
It didn't make any sense. Because, again, they built up Taker to have his resurgence. You know, he's come and cleaned house, literally, according to Vince McMahon, at Survivor Series, and he was getting his power back. And, yeah, you're right. Mo just scoops him up on his shoulder like he's a baby and puts him in the casket. And Mike Chioda in his mullet? Mike Chioda?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It's just, I was appalled, too, man.
I can't believe Undertaker let him do that. That was just weird.
From a character standpoint, it was weird, you know.
But
maybe he was like, "Well, you know, I'm going over though in this match."
That's true. That's a good point.
I'm stuffing both of them in there.
He makes the same mistake that a few other people have made, and he doesn't shut the lid to the casket.
These heels have never seen a casket.
I know.
You just put him in there and you just slam it. That's all you do.
I could have won. Instead,
he throws him in there, and then he comes back to the ring, the opposite side of the ring, and hands Mabel the crown, and doesn't close the lid. And then Mabel goes to shut it, but Taker stops it, and of course he's back in the ring behind him. He goes to shut it, and he turns around, turns his back to it, and walks away like, oh, yeah, I won. And then he doesn't see Taker's behind him, and Undertaker tries to take him down, finally gets him down with a running, diving clothesline, and then a huge chokeslam.
Yep, gets him up that's off his feet.
Yeah, Mabel did his part for that to make it look good. So
yeah, I wrote that Mabel sucks, but he's having a good time in this match. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
he puts the crown on and he's dancing and he's bumping and he's selling for the Undertaker. You know,
he's not King Kong Bundy in this match.
No, not at all. Definitely not.
But he is hokey when he's trying to get It's like Giant Gonzalez. It reminded me of Giant Gonzalez matches when Undertaker's, you know, trying to clothesline him repeatedly and he's, you know, wiggling his arms around like, whoa, 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 you can't knock me over. Like, it's kind of lame, but he does it. But yeah, he's having a great time, you know. Probably just because he's in there with Undertaker, so.
Yeah.
But anyway. But yeah, after that big chokeslam, then Undertaker rolls him, Mabel, into the casket, right?
Well, he hits Mabel's stand-in, and Undertaker hits a big boot and basically just kicks him down, and Mabel falls into the casket out of that.
Yeah, that's right. And then, he kicks him in there, and then he puts Mo in.
Yeah, Mo runs
in the ring and choke slams him, too.
He brings the remnants of the urn in there, and Undertaker chokes him with the remnants of the urn, and slaps him with the goozle, as Vince McMahon calls it.
Yeah, he does. I thought it was an internet term, but no, Vince McMahon says it.
Calls it the goozle. And all this while, King is on commentary screaming, "Raise up, Mabel! Raise up, Mabel!" I don't know why he said that, but like he's like raising him from the dead. I don't know. Like you said, Mo gets put in the coffin again. So that was cool.
Then we have the return of the coffin cam.
Yeah.
Not a cast cam, the coffin cam.
Just for that one little shot.
For like 6 seconds.
Yep.
You see Undertaker, because Undertaker climbs in the casket with him. He grabs the remnants of the urn, the necklace, and he holds it high, man. He holds it way high out of the casket and climbs in the ring, and then he slams the lid because that's what you do.
You
slam the lid when you put your opponent in there.
Vince wasn't sure, though. He's like, can he close it? Can he close the lid? Trying to sell the drama of it. Like, I think he can. He just has to grab it.
Yeah, not that hard. So, and luckily, this match is over in 6 minutes and 11 seconds.
Yes,
so.
Another Christmas gift for us. Short and sweet. And, I mean, that's pretty much the end of Men on a Mission of Mabel and Mo. They would make a couple more appearances. They're at the Royal Rumble in 96. And also Diesel would end up beating Mabel on the first Raw of 1996 in just 8 seconds. So, you know, Mabel's push, the Mabel experiment ends very, very quickly. And I think Mabel knew he appreciated, you know, that he got a chance to run with it, but and then he's putting everybody out. Yeah, he had a run on top for a little while, and he knows his place. He's putting everybody out on the way out of the territory, and he has no problem putting Undertaker over short and sweet, and letting Undertaker, you know, totally go over and squash him this moment. So
yeah, there was no controversy there.
Yeah, he's returning the favor.
Both the guys in there, yeah. But again, this makes Undertaker look strong. He does the pose after the match is over with the necklace in the air, and then he gives it to Paul Bearer, and again he celebrates like his, the prodigal son has just returned, his long lost baby.
He's like a kid on Christmas morning.
He is, man. He really is. It's awesome. He's so excited. But then Undertaker starts signaling to his waist. He starts making the classic. Got his arms around his waist and, moving them back and forth like, I'm coming for the WWF championship, or title, as they call it at this point.
He does the discount double check. As it's known, yes.
Discount double check, excuse me. The commentary points it out.
Yeah.
He's signaling he wants to come for the WWF title.
They make a point to note that he finally has all of his power back now that he has the remnants of the urn. And yeah, like we've said, we've seen Undertaker slide down the card at the beginning of the year against IRS in like the second match on the show, and now we've raised all the way back at the end of the year to where he's calling out the champion, the WWF champion Bret Hart, and asking for a title shot in a symbolic way, which I didn't remember. I didn't remember him doing that at the end of this match. I got kind of excited when I saw that. I thought it was a pretty neat little way to build up to it. And the crowd's getting excited.
We were headed with January and then WrestleMania, but I couldn't remember how we got there. So yeah, seeing that at the end of this match was like a little, like a little cherry on top, man. For me, I was excited too.
And then somebody on commentary, I don't know who, says that's not a promise, that's a threat. What he's giving out to Bret Hart. So yeah, they're selling it like this is a big deal that we're shooting up to a potential Undertaker Bret Hart matchup.
Right. And then after that, there's a WWF. In Your House Extra. Now, was this on the pay-per-view, or was it just on the Coliseum Video, or could you tell? Or
yeah, I'm not sure. It seemed like something that maybe it was just on the Coliseum Video, but I don't know.
Because the way, it seemed like that, but the commentary afterward made it sound like it was part of the show.
Right.
The live broadcast. So I don't know, but anyway, it's a WWF In Your House Extra pops up, and Todd Pettengill's backstage, and he informs us, he's with Paul Bearer and Undertaker, and he informs us that Undertaker is the number one contender and will challenge Bret Hart at Royal Rumble for the title. And Paul Bearer is sure to thank Mr. Monsoon. He calls him.
I'd like to thank Mr. Monsoon for the opportunity that we've all been waiting for.
Yes, he says it's like this is a dream come true or something. Yeah.
But he does say that the fans have been wondering when Undertaker is going to get a chance again, because it's been forever.
Yeah, it's been
5 years.
Yeah.
4 years.
It's been 4 years since he's been champion. It's been almost 2 years since he's had a title shot. So yeah. This is big.
And then here we go. We got Tweener Diesel comes in. He said, "No, it's his shot." And I said, "Yo, you beat Mabel. That's just you get the next shot." So no, and he calls Paul Bearer Gomez. So Gomez Adams. Great. So and he sits there face to face with Taker, and that sets their match up WrestleMania. So I'm sure we'll touch on this on episode 20 as well. But it's kind of cool. You mentioned how Diesel's kind of a tweener after that match at Survivor Series, and and here he is kind of turning heelish a little bit more. But again, we got a couple more stops in the road before we get to Diesel and Taker. But it's cool to see them building this stuff up, setting seeds, months and months in advance.
I didn't remember that. Diesel's starting to get that build up, and we're gonna see this matchup at WrestleMania. But first, we're gonna see Undertaker versus Bret Hart at Royal Rumble. So they're building both of those matchups up at the same time, making Undertaker again the main focus of everything. He's at play in both of these big matchups that are coming up. And man, you missed Paul Bearer's just epic put down of Diesel, because Diesel runs in.
Go ahead and say it.
And Paul Bearer says, Undertaker, Diesel's about to say something to Paul Bearer, and Undertaker steps in, and Diesel says, Undertaker, you've been ducking people a lot lately. And he's like, I don't duck any challenges. And they have a 30-second long stare down to end the show. And it's intense, man. You've got two big superstars. The guy who's been carrying the company. Yeah, two big guys. The guy who's been carrying the company for the past year. And, you know, the phenom, the dead man, the biggest star in the company, arguably. We're finally getting teased with that matchup. And, something to look forward to here in 1996.
Well, yeah, because as we do this podcast, we're talking about how the business changes, too. And, you know, Undertaker he was not part of the quote-unquote new generation. He was here, you know, five years before this, you know, so... Diesel's the face of the new generation, they always keep saying. And so now you're getting to see, you know, someone who's from the Hulk Hogan era, from the, you know, Randy Savage era, you know, who fought with Ric Flair, you know, in 91, 92. Seeing somebody, you know, Undertaker from that part of WWF history, now he's in the new era. He's going to go with the big dog from the new era, you know. So that's kind of cool to see. And then, you know, just as his character changes and as he goes into the, you know, next stage of his career. Because, yeah, he's back on top. Last chapter closed, 95, thank God, is over. And we're heading in 96, and lots of gold dust and Mankind to look forward to.
Yeah, and
hope you guys are ready.
Yeah, some really good matches to look forward to, for sure. And a couple more stinkers along the way, no doubt about it. But it should be fun. We've enjoyed the past 5 years, and we'll dive into 2018 by kicking off with 1996 with Royal Rumble 96, a sort of a forgotten, I think, matchup, sort of a hidden gem, I think, Undertaker versus Bret Hart in 1996. We all remember their matchup at SummerSlam 97, a really great matchup, but a lot of people forget don't talk about their matchup at Royal Rumble 96, and I haven't seen it in a long, long time, so I'm excited to revisit it and see what it was like. So you can watch along with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts about it. We want to hear your thoughts about this match. So let us know. Did you love it? Did you hate it? Did you think it was one of the worst things you've ever seen in your life? Who knows? Let us know on Twitter at Talking Taker, on Facebook. You can find us Talking Taker. You can leave us a comment, rate, subscribe, all that good stuff on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Podomatic, on YouTube, all those different places. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Alex Dorio. We want to get connected with you, and we want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays to you and your family as well.
If you were there in Hershey Park, Hershey, Pennsylvania, if you ate chocolate while you watched this match, please let us know.
Please let us know.
Yeah, but again, thanks for these last 5 months we've been doing this. We look forward to many, many more. Thank you for our fan base. It's growing. We got a lot of downloads. We're averaging over 100 downloads an episode, which is pretty cool, and it's growing. So we really enjoy that. So might not sound like a lot to some of you, but that's a lot for us. So we love that. And it's going good. And Merry Christmas to everybody. And we'll take her easy.
Merry Christmas, Yokozuna.